And because we're the nonprofits, plural, there's at least two of us. And because the nonprofits needs hosts, I'm Dennis Loubet, and he's Matt Dillahunty.
Hi.
And since we're broadcasting live from the Dillahunty Studios in Austin, Texas, that means it's the 11th of August, 2007, and the music you're listening to is Wondrous Stories by Yes. Because the atheist community of Austin sponsors this show, it's a nonprofit educational organization for the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of church and state. And because the ACA has a happy hour, there's a pub called the Dog and Duck, where we meet for it at 7:30 every Thursday evening. And as a result of there being the website www.atheist-community.org and ACA voicemail at 512-371-2911, you can contact those places for more information. Seeing as this is a podcast, we broadcast live every other Saturday from 2 to 3:30 and often beyond. And because there are instructions on how to participate in the show live at www.nonprofitsradio.com, there's a chat room you can log into to do it. And so, because you can sit back, enjoy the show.
Wow. Hey, everybody. It's been a couple weeks, and this is my crazy, stupid, busy weekend. So Dennis has done a lot of work getting ready for the show, and well, once again, I really haven't.
Yeah, and even I slipped up, and I didn't get all our listener mail.
Yeah,
and I am.
I grabbed pieces of it, though.
Mea culpa. I am guilty of that one, and I'm sorry.
So,
and there was some good listener mail too. Darn it!
Yeah, and I got bits and pieces of it that we
I'll
can
have to bring it next time.
Look at and go over later. And we're expecting a phone call a little later on today too.
Ooh, from a mystery guest?
Yeah, we'll keep it a mystery for now.
Okay.
But yeah, the phone thing's supposed to be working fairly decent. Dennis and I are all sitting here with headphones, looking like professional studio stuff, and we'll see how that works out. So, what's been going on with you?
Oh, well, for this last week, I've been at SIGGRAPH. That's a...
And for the non-cool people, I guess.
Yes, it's the big convention on computer graphics and scientific visualization and stuff like that. And I've been going there just checking out the new tools that I'll be using, you know, new features of 3D Studio, new programs like ZBrush and Modo and Mudbox and... all sorts of things that I use.
Cool.
And while I was there, I spoke to a friend of mine who was who's a name in the computer graphics industry. And I'm not going to give you his name because I'm going to tell you about some of his adventures. He's the closest thing I have to an action-adventure friend. I mean, he tells stories of flying out of certain countries with tanks approaching the end of the runway. Really? Yeah. So
he's got John Williams following around doing...
Oh, that would be awesome. And speaking of John Williams, the reason I couldn't get a hold of him for the last few weeks was that he was in the Holy Land shooting a bunch of footage. And
I hear they put a few more holes in that Holy Land.
Yeah. But he was in places like he shot video in Petra, and you could actually see a bit of Petra in one of the Indiana Jones movies. I think the last one, The Last Crusade, where they're looking for the Holy Grail. And it's that church front or palace front carved into the side of a cliff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you've seen that?
Yeah.
In various pictures and, you know, various things. That is just one tiny, infinitesimal part of this gigantic, gigantic building carved into the side of this mountain. And he showed me some shots of him in there, and there's like this room. And it's this big square room, and there's this little tiny guy at the bottom of it. And that's him, and I'm going... Damn, these guys carved big into the size of a frickin' mountain.
That's huge stuff.
And so he's shooting this stuff for, I guess, some sort of a biblical archaeology-esque documentary. And I asked him, "Are you, you know, are they doing the dialogue and the narrative and all this stuff?" And he's going, "No, I'm doing all that." And I told them up front that it's going to be a archaeological or anthropological study, rather than a biblical study.
Aha.
And I'm going, "Cool. I hope that."
So more science well. And less theology.
Right.
I think that Noah fit all these animals on a boat. And then now it's up at the top of Mount Ararat.
But he's been to all these incredible shrines and churches and things. Yeah. Churches built inside of churches.
Wow.
Yeah, there are...
It's like, I think they did that with a Starbucks here a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, it's like, I told him that story. It's like, yeah, it's like the Starbucks built in the restroom of a Starbucks. You know? But no, they would have these shrines or actual, you know, church buildings inside a bigger church. And some of the doorways to these things were like really low, about waist high. So you would have to crawl on hands and knees into the shrine. Now, part of that is to force you to approach as a supplicant would.
Right.
The other part of it is to force you to put your weapon on the ground as you crawl in so you can be easily killed if they don't want you in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Love those churches.
Hey, here's something. Stick your head in this box, and if God thinks you're worthy, he'll anoint you.
Yeah. He shot footage down in the place where, supposedly, where Christ's blood fell on the ground. Apparently, that place is now underground.
Oh, God. There's a guy who's in... Sorry to jump all over your story.
Oh, go for it.
That moronic biblical archaeologist, whose name I can't remember, but we ragged on him a while back, he believes that the Ark of the Covenant is under there, under hill, where you know, Christ is crucified at Golgotha or whatever, and the blood drips down and it seeps down, and it's been continually dripping or whatever for 2,000 years, and the Jews have got the Ark of the Covenant hidden in there, and he's heard this from some high-up rabbis, but they won't let us go in there, and the rabbi won't confirm his story, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah. But he's been down there, and there's this gold-encrusted little shrine thing, and you can crawl in, and there's a stone where supposedly the blood fell, and you can kiss it.
Hmm.
Yeah. And he describes how the stone is worn away by countless lips. I go, these people are freaking crazy.
It kind of reminds me of like the Blarney Stone type.
Yeah. And his take on his whole adventure out there in the Holy Land was that it's really all about the money. Because he'd go into these churches and he'd start to shoot pictures.
Right.
And the priest would come up and say, "Oh, no. You can't take pictures here." And he would say, "How about for $200? And I go, "Oh, okay, sure, no problem."
Yeah, now you can take pictures.
And so he was describing greasing countless palms of priests. Just money flown out. At one point, he goes to a church, which is full of people praying and stuff, and starts to shoot pictures. And the priest comes up and says, "You can't shoot here." And he goes, "Well, what I'd really like to do is have the whole place cleared out so I could shoot, you know, the empty building." And the priest goes, "No way." And he goes, "What if I contribute $1,000 to your fund, you know, your poor people's fund or something?" And poof, 10 minutes later, church is deserted and he's shooting.
Okay, everybody out of the
pool. So it's like he also tells about being at the Vatican and hearing the phrase, "harvesting the wallets." apparently the gift shops at the Vatican are really, really, you know, well-oiled machines. And they know what groups are coming, what buses are coming, carrying what groups. And they'll push. They adjust the store shelves to push the right items and things like that to get maximum harvest from.
To me, that's the documentary that he should be shooting.
Really?
I mean,
it is.
I love religious art and architecture. I did the lecture on hell last Sunday, and there were, you know, tons and tons of pictures of images and visions of hell that people created over years. But I like old churches. Some of my favorite, when I was in Turkey, I saw one of the most beautiful churches I've ever seen, and it's this little teeny thing set into a crevice with trees and everything growing over the top of it, and it's just a beautiful little church, and I can appreciate it for that. I don't like the religion behind it. I don't like what it does to people or how it's used. I don't think there's anything supernatural behind it, but it doesn't matter. There's good art there, and there's, you know, architecture and everything else, but it would be nice to see his documentary or whoever's on, you know, religious art and sacred places and whatever else. But I think that would also be an interesting documentary to show.
See how.
How they're milking people for cash.
It's all a big business.
Hey, my phone's ringing.
Oh, no.
Hello?
Hey.
Hey.
Oh.
This is our guest calling early.
I hear a voice.
There's a delay on.
Oh, yeah?
A delay on the
phone? I'm taking my headphones off.
Oh, yeah. You can't listen to the podcast. It's delayed.
Okay. Well, I'm here.
Cool.
Hey, guys.
Jeff D. joining us on the phone.
Hi, everybody. Don't talk to me in the chat room now. I'm not paying attention.
Odd. I'm getting kind of like an echo of my voice.
Are you?
Yeah.
Headphones
surprising.
Are gone. It's just plain old telephone.
Okay. Well, I'm hoping it comes out good on the other end that way.
Okay. Well, I apologize for my voice. I'm not trying actually intentionally to do a funny voice this time. It's just that I've got a, I got a cold.
Well, we can put special effects on you.
Could you? Go ahead.
No.
Put me in a cavern or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Not completely sure that that'll work.
Yeah.
Excuse me. See, there will be occasional coughing and stuff.
Of course.
So... how's the show going?
Show's going fine. I was telling about my adventures in San Diego and SIGGRAPH.
I was hearing your story of the friend that went and photographed.
Uh-huh.
Cool story.
Yeah, it's neat. And he'll be sending me photos, so.
Awesome.
It's pretty cool.
Awesome.
Just gold-encrusted crap all over the place.
Uh-huh. Gold-encrusted crap all over the place,
yes.
And they still find it necessary to bow and,
and harvest
and
those wallets.
Finagle for every last penny they can get out of their
business. Always need more. That's right. God loves you, and he needs money.
Yeah. Hey, so, I've been listening to the show. I'm everybody knows that I'm away for a while
because
I got a job. Haven't been doing that job this past week because I've been out sick, but thank you very much for having me as the first official call-in guest.
Yay!
And it's even kind of cool because your disease is insulated from us by the phone. It's
That's
like
true.
It serves a purpose.
That is true.
Beyond just being a call-in.
But, you know, I could still be infecting you with any number of memes, so be careful.
That's true. That's true.
You know, use, you know, basic precautions.
Damaging memes.
So what do you want to talk about now that I'm here? Or do I have to have a subject?
See, this is what happens when we don't prepare for guests.
Right.
Well, there is one thing I kind of want to talk about.
I thought there might be, so feel free.
All right. I'm very, very excited about Dawkins' new show.
Oh, yeah, I've heard good things about it.
The Enemies of Reason.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Going after psychics and card readers and astrologers and those kinds of dumbasses.
Yep.
Which is, it's a very, it's a subject very near to my heart because I was actually more focused on that than the atheism thing for a while there. Dennis will remember.
Oh, yeah.
He and I used to go down to the University of Texas at Austin campus to hang out with the University Skeptical Society, which is a student organization.
Right.
Yeah, that was cool.
It was cool.
And they had talks and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
Debates, yeah.
Yeah. They managed to hold it together long enough to actually have a debate against the some Christian organization.
Yeah.
On campus, big public debate, and that was fun.
Mm-hmm. Now, in that Dawkins thing, I read an article on that Dawkins thing where he's talking to, where some psychic was talking to him.
Yeah.
What happened there?
Oh, okay, apparently this didn't make it into the show.
Oh.
Because...
So cool.
Oh, wait, you know, I'm slightly unsure which of these two things didn't make it into the show. There's one instance where... I am sure which one it is. He's talking to some, cold reader.
Right.
I.e., somebody that talks to the dead, right?
Yeah.
And she's going on and on and on about how she sees the spirit of his dead father hanging around, and the old guy is upset with Dawkins because he doesn't, have a picture of him with him or something like that. And then Dawkins goes, yeah, but, I just saw my father yesterday. He lives nearby.
Visits me every week.
And she, goes, turn off the cameras and raised a legal stink and denied them the right to use the footage in the show.
But
he's not missing any opportunity to talk about it. Every single article about the show talks about that incident.
Oh, absolutely. I would crow that everywhere.
Yeah.
That's great.
I think there was a connection between the atheism cause and the general, skeptic cause of opposing people like, palm readers and stuff. There's a connection there because it boils down to the same kind of thinking.
Yeah. I even read on Dawkins' site that somebody was criticizing him the rise of atheism caused... she's blaming him for the rise of atheism causing an increase in superstitious beliefs.
Right. We've heard
other
that shit
superstitious
before,
beliefs.
Right? I've heard the same kind of argument saying that the rise of Islam in Europe is because atheism has weakened the Christian churches in Europe.
Yeah, you drive people away from this one completely irrational belief system, and they're just going to latch onto others. And that argument fails to realize that, now we'll just educate them about these other irrational beliefs, and hopefully we'll get people moving in a direction where they embrace the rational.
Right.
Exactly. That's humorous, but you got to expect that kind of desperate reaching for an excuse to complain.
Hey, yeah. A couple of quick side notes, things that you mentioned kind of prompted me to think of these. You were talking about the campus skeptic group.
Yeah.
There's not any good group anymore, but...
At UT.
Yes.
In Austin.
But that's about to change.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, really?
The ACA, in conjunction with a couple of students down there, is putting together a new, primarily atheist group, but I'm pretty sure that it's going to, touch on, skepticism and free thought and everything else as well.
Yeah.
They've already got a couple... of students decided they're looking for another student. They've got a faculty sponsor who we all know. And so hopefully starting this coming semester, there'll actually be some kind of atheist student group, skeptic student group presence on the campus again.
So, excellent.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I was just the big organization that tries to put together all these atheist groups on campuses, whatever that's called, their website, and looking to see if there was one in Austin.
The SSA?
Yes. Secular Student Alliance, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
P.Z. Myers linked that today.
I was sad that there was nothing there, but that's great. It's really tough to keep one of those organizations going,
right.
because the thing about students is they, grow up and move on.
And they also drink and party.
Right. And they're busy.
Well,
I'm just giving. Yeah, I mean, they are there to learn, but, so sometimes those social groups, but think about it, if you look at it, there are so many religious groups on campus and everything
else.
Oh,
man. Unopposed.
Yeah. I was invited down to UT for Hate Free Week at UT, where they had this panel that was focused on religious diversity. And originally, when they put it together, they had just had representatives of different religions. Mm-hmm. They didn't have an atheist on there.
Uh-huh.
And... somebody down there who I won't name just because I'm not going to toss out people's names without asking them, said, you really need to have an atheist on there, so why don't you contact the ACA, I'm sure Matt would come down and do it and whatever, and I did it. And I enjoyed it, but it surprised me just how many religious student groups there are down there. There's at least one for every religion, and sometimes two or three.
So wait a minute. Oh, what exactly did you do?
We had a panel discussion,
Okay.
on religious diversity.
All right. And I'm really curious to know what the believers were saying about the rights of atheists.
Nothing.
Pretended like you weren't there.
No, basically the panel's position, what it was they wanted something that wasn't proselytizing and wasn't speaking too much about different beliefs, but about, they wanted everybody to come up and give like an example of the history of their religion or their beliefs and kind of give an introduction, like an intro to atheism.
Right.
And to give our thoughts on how we can be less divisive.
Yeah.
How we can work together.
Oh, gosh.
There was, you know, everybody was on their best and nicest
behavior. Right.
And cracking jokes at each other's expense. You know, the Catholic gets up there to talk about what they believe with regard to sex, and of course immediately somebody else gets up there to say that, you know, we're not so worried about sex. And I intended to say, but forgot to because I got sidetracked by so many other comments, that I don't give a damn who you sleep with. It's your business.
Right.
And as long as you're consenting adults, I don't really care. And I certainly don't think that just because you happen to sleep with somebody that you know, Father Joe down at the end doesn't think you should, that's a bad thing.
Yeah. Well, Father Joe probably wants you to sleep with him.
Could be. I might be too old, though.
Here's another exciting thing. I had heard, again, on Feringula, P.C. Meyer's blog, that Borders Books has atheism section now.
Yeah, I saw it when I went down to pick up the Potter book.
My partner and I also went and visited one of those sites. And of course, here's the hilarious thing, right? You know, a lot of those bookstores, there's these little short like cubbyhole kind of corridors for each section. So like, there's three walls of books, and then the back end of the thing is open to the rest of the store, and sometimes there's an island in the middle.
Yeah.
So it was like that, right? So at the end of the island, deep inside the religion section, there was the display of all the atheism books. So that was hilarious, right?
deep inside
enemy territory.
Right.
Unsurprisingly, there were some loving Christian had taken down some of the atheism books and put up The Purpose-Driven Life on the shelf. That's to be expected.
Right.
Well, one of the things is that whenever I'd go to a bookstore looking for books on atheism or within, you know, the subject matter, I always went to the religion section because that's where they shelved them.
Right.
And most of the time you'd find like a portion of one shelf would just have like a little atheism tag there, and there'd be like 10 books maybe if you were lucky.
Yeah, and if you were lucky enough to even get an atheism tag as opposed to a comparative religion or philosophy.
Then inevitably what you'd find is you'd find, you know, like lately, of course, with Dawkins' book, it's more popular, but you'd find, you know, Michael Martin's The Case Against Christianity, mm-hmm. and a couple other books, and then you'd find, and this is fair, I'm not complaining that this is unfair, because atheism is the subject, but then you'd find stuff like Alistair McGrath's The Twilight of Atheism, these books that are, you know. And I think that's fair that they're in there, but my complaint is that you've got this teeny tiny little section, and you'll have three books that are talking about atheism or, you know, arguing against different religions.
From the atheist perspective.
And then three more that are,
right.
you know. There's kind of a,
even when we have our own section, we're still contaminated.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know whether their policy now is to leave that section with only like pro-atheism books. I didn't notice any anti-atheism books in the atheism section. Hmm. I mean, other than ones that have been put in there by some moron.
When I was at Borders to pick up the Harry Potter book,
they
had not only an atheism section, but they had an end cap display.
Yeah, they had both of those at the place I went to, too.
And the end cap display had Dawkins, Harris, Dennett, Stenger, Hitchens, and then it also had Francis Collins, Oh, it also had Ali Hassan, her son, whoever,
right.
She's brilliant. But then it also had Francis Collins and Alistair McGrath all in the same end cap. So you had a handful of books that were, by atheists about atheism, and a couple that were, in opposition.
At the store I was at, and I'm sure this is absolutely fascinating for everyone to hear all the nuts and bolts of how things work
local
in a bookstore,
stores.
But in the place I was at, the end cap actually had labels by the shelves on the end cap, right? So you could tell if the book belonged.
Oh.
And that's how I knew the bookstore hadn't decided that they needed to put Purpose Driven Life up there.
Somebody else.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And that's how I also know they had sold out of Christopher Hitchens. But so my partner notices that the intrusion of religious books into the end cap, the atheism end cap. But worse, there were stacks of Bibles on the floor at the base of the end cap. With all the atheism stuff.
Great.
And
charming.
I wasn't sure, but we went and asked the manager, and she said, "Oh well, sometimes you just have overstock, and we have to put it someplace." And I pointed out to her that the other end cap of the island was completely empty, and they could have put all the Bibles they wanted to over there.
Well, I think that,
and they said they would.
I think, I think that's pretty good. I also argue that most of us are pretty aware that if you actually read the Bible, that's probably the best argument for atheism there is.
So. Good point.
that is a good point. And also, for me, it was just exhilarating that there was even this, big official recognition of atheism.
Oh, I love it.
In the bookstore in the first place, so all this stuff is like, you go ahead, as long as you have the atheism section clearly labeled, it doesn't bother me if some other kinds of books intrude there.
Yeah.
I loved the placement of the atheism section right smack dab in the middle of the religion section, standing there defiantly.
I think the interesting thing to me is that, Dawkins' book sold 500,000 copies, I think.
Yeah.
And, Hitchens' book is climbing. Dennett Harris and Stinger didn't sell quite that many.
Uh-huh.
But what people are realizing is that, atheists represent a fairly small minority, but there are way more atheists than there are religious Jews, for example, in America.
Right.
And we represent a significant market. So why is it that your bookstore, which is crammed with all of this other stuff, can't make the space to put in 15, 20 books, on atheism to give people some education, some options?
Well, clearly they can, and now that the sales are there to justify it, they're doing it, which is great.
Yeah.
It was pretty neat. On my flight to San Diego, I stopped in the little bookstore, I think it was Book People, at the airport, and there was Hitchens' book, and I bought it.
Cool.
So I'm reading that.
I think, I haven't heard this said, but it occurs to me every time this subject comes up that, where atheists are somewhere between 7 to 14% of the United States population, according to polls, right? But 500,000 books is like way less than even 7% of the population.
Oh, yeah.
So I think what is important here is that no matter how small a percentage of the American public is atheists, some much bigger percentage, and I don't know how big, of the people who buy and read books are atheists.
Or are at least entered, because even out of the 500,000 that bought Dawkins' book, we have no idea how many of those were atheists. It could be, it could be properly representative of the public, where only 10% or so of the people who bought Dawkins' book are atheists.
Right. I'm just saying. I think our impact in that area is magnified because we tend to be the intellectual, thinking, reading people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and another reason I was thinking about earlier why bookstores may not put so many atheist books on the shelves is because I don't know about everybody else, but it's rare that, I mean, I like to go to bookstores, and I do occasionally, like most of the time I'll go to Half Price Books, I think. But, you know, the big bookstores, there's a markup, and usually if I got a couple of books that I want to buy, it's cheaper and easier for me to order them online. So,
well, but that just, you know, I think that's going to be true of people from all walks of life. And
right.
So bookstores in general are having to fight the drain of customers away to internet sales.
Yeah, although they didn't have to fight anybody when the Harry Potter book was released.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. And by the way, no, I don't know if you guys have read it.
Yeah, day one.
We got the thing the night it came out. We're in the middle of chapter three somewhere. Don't talk about the Harry Potter book. I'm amazed that I have not stumbled across a discussion of what happens later on in the book.
Yeah, I haven't been spoiled either. I have no idea why.
Good.
I actually read it the first day.
Yeah.
Harry gets kidnapped and taken to Afghanistan.
Okay, well, this has been great fun.
And all the audio is good on your end.
Yeah. The audio is fine on my end. I can hear everything.
Cool. Because I'm getting a slight echo, and I think it's actually going across the podcast, but I'll check that out later. We got plenty of stuff to tune.
Okay.
Yeah.
All righty.
Well, thanks, man.
Sure thing. Yeah. I have to go and do some things now.
Of course.
Okay.
If you ever want me to call back, I can still do this whilst I am away from the show officially because of my professional career, but...
Let us know next time you work up a good rant.
Let me know when you need a guest.
All right.
Surely. And you can just call in and correct us sometime. Or say hi.
Yeah, okay, that's true.
Yeah.
Can I give out your number?
Only to close friends.
All right, guys.
Cool. Thanks, Jeff.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye.
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 And now that I've hung that up, I don't have that echo in my...
Yeah.
I have to look into that. If you're in the chat room, let me know what the audio sounded like on that, and I'll take a peek while Dennis is reading
trying to do news.
News. Well, because there's a delay, it's going to be almost a minute before anybody can even answer that question. But
okay.
Unless they already have, because I can't see the chat room right now.
Let's see. What story would dovetail nicely? I don't really have anything that dovetails into a discussion about books.
Well, there were other things. Actually, there was a correction somebody sent in that kind of reminded me because Jeff mentioned John Edwards.
Yeah.
And 2 weeks ago, I made a couple mistakes that one of the listeners, and I'll swing around here to my listener mail post here, wrote in to correct me because I'm a big idiot. where is it? A quick correction. There we go. Evidently, instead of saying John Edwards, I said John Stewart.
Oh, dear.
And I know that John Stewart doesn't claim to be psychic or talk to the dead. He just hosts The Daily Show. I also evidently said something about sleeping with your brother's dead wife. When I meant your dead brother's wife. We're not, you know, even the Bible doesn't do much towards, like, advocating necrophilia or anything else.
No, it's just a little verbally mixed up here.
There's, see if I can get this link out here. I don't know if you had this story or not about the atheist military group in Iraq.
I think so. Yeah,
I want to mention
about it.
I know it's a week or so old, and most of the listeners are probably familiar with it now because it's made a few blogs. I want to mention it myself because this bugs the hell out of me. Actually, Kathleen, let me figure this out. Kathleen Johnson, the military director for American Atheist, who's also currently serving in Iraq. Sent an email with regard to the Military Association of Atheists and Freethinkers. There was a young member of that organization who had a couple letters published in Stars and Stripes. an atheist enlisted soldier, and I'll just read this part, thought he would like to see if he could generate some interest in MAAF meetings at his forward operations base here in Iraq. He got things coordinated and started hanging flyers. And after weeks of having to rehang his flyers almost daily because some vandal kept tearing them down, he finally succeeded in having a small MAAF meeting. Boy, that's a crappy...
Yeah. Yep.
Anyway, I wasn't there because the meeting wasn't on my FOB, but I knew he was holding it and was expecting to hear from him after the meeting. Keep in mind that this young soldier did everything right. He went through the chaplain's office, jumped through all the hoops it takes to legally hold meetings that are religiously or philosophically based. Four soldiers attended this meeting, all of them very junior enlisted, with the exception of one major in 04, who claimed to be a free thinker. Well, to make a very long story short, the major turned out to be a fundamentalist Christian who verbally berated the other attendees, accused them of plotting against Christians and disrespecting soldiers who've died protecting the Constitution, and threatened them with punishment under the UCMJ for their activities. He said they were going down. And he said he'd do whatever it took to shut the meetings down. Keep in mind that by this point, he had two of the attendees, one soldier ran as soon as the shouting started, he had two of them standing at attention so that he could yell at them and humiliate them and berate them, and they couldn't do anything but stand there. This apparently went on for several minutes, at which time the major shut down the meeting by saying he wasn't some pushover chaplain and that he wouldn't tolerate the meetings to continue. The young MAAF member who hosted the meetings is freaked out about what happened, but he said he's going to continue with the meetings and isn't going to be bullied by the prayer warriors. He's going to be contacting his chaplain and other things about trying to get this meeting started back up. When I was in the military, I was a believer. I wasn't a particularly active believer. It was very much kind of in the back of my mind, but when questioned, I would actually say I was a believer. Toward the end of my military career, I had my dog tags changed to no religious preference, not because I was an atheist, but because I no longer considered myself a Baptist, which is what used to be on my dog tags, and was kind of more theistic or whatever. But I never knew that there were military atheist and agnostic and freethinker organizations. I never heard about them, and I wouldn't have gone to the meetings because that's not what I was.
Right.
But I also wouldn't have gone and harassed them. I wouldn't have gone in and pretended to be a freethinker, only to use my rank to essentially verbally beat them up over this. Now, this major is talking about how they're being disrespectful to soldiers who've died, and I'm wondering if this major's ever heard of Pat Tillman.
Mm-hmm.
He's also hitting them about, they're disrespecting the Constitution, which it's clear that he's never fucking read.
Right.
He, and I kind of wrote a little, abusive email that I didn't send, but because I don't have any contact information for him anyway.
Yeah.
His actions discredit the uniform, discredit the military service. He is violating the very Constitution that he thinks, that he has sworn to preserve and protect. He's violating it by not allowing these other people the same religious freedom that he enjoys.
Right.
And to abuse his position, you don't get to... Your religious freedom ends where everybody else's begins. These men, whoever they're fighting, have every right to hold that meeting. They went through all the proper channels. And you've got somebody who... And the only excuse that I can come up with is that this is fear. That we talked about this a little on the last show.
Yeah.
Where obviously we are kind of striking fear in the hearts of some believers. And I think it's not so much what we're doing that's causing this fear. I think there's an element within the Christian community specifically, and I'm sure it applies in other religions as well, but specifically in the Christian community. And this goes back to what we were talking about earlier, who are basically looking for any way to make a buck off believers.
Uh-huh.
And if you can convince them that their values and their beliefs and their religious freedoms are under attack from this atheist nemesis, then you can get them to donate money.
More money, right.
To fight that. We had that group we were talking about who's producing the commercial, the anti-atheism commercial, where they just, you know, oh, you're going to, Dawkins and Harris and all these others, they want to take away your right to pray, and you'll end up in this,
yeah,
you know.
Put you all in re-education camps.
Communist,
and blah, blah,
yeah,
blah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Society and everything else. This sort of fear-mongering, which I have to say is mirrored nicely in the current administration of the U.S. government, and I won't point fingers as to actually who is doing the fear-mongering, because I don't think I know. I think there's this element, both within the government and within Christians, that pushes fear, and they do it for control, they do it for power, they do it for money. And so you've got this major who's over there in an extremely stressful situation in a war-torn country, who finds out that these godless heathens who he has been told are a threat to his beliefs and everything that he's standing for and fighting for. So he decides that he's going to infiltrate him and shut him down. And on the one hand, you know, he's a complete ass for doing
indeed.
It.
Indeed.
On the other hand, he's just a frightened little child, and it's a shame that he's in a position of authority over these other people. Because,
right.
And it's a shame that he's been so crippled by his fear, because I think, for the most part, if he sat down and actually talked to those guys, he'd find out that they're not trying to take away his rights to hold any beliefs.
Right, and they're not disrespecting the soldiers,
yeah.
The fallen soldiers and
yeah.
Such. Good grief now.
But yeah, that was a story that kind of hit home in the past couple of weeks. You know, having been in the military and been in similar situations, granted, I've not been in any major firefights, but and I wasn't an atheist when I was in. But there's this thing of religious freedom about why is it that the people who seem to be working most often and hardest for proper religious freedom are the ones that don't have any religion at all.
Yeah,
you know, why can't these majority Christians who feel that they can, you know, win by attrition or maintain their control by, you know, the sheer numbers, they don't understand the value of religious freedom. And when it comes under attack, when they perceive that
they
it's come under
out.
Attack, yeah, their response is not rational at all.
Right. Well, it's kind of dovetails into what another listener wrote in. Correcting us on one of our arguments where we argued our point well enough, but we didn't attack the issue of the theists calling us militant atheists. And he said, that's really the first lie they told, saying that Dawkins and these new atheists are all these militant atheists. He's right. Militancy sort of suggests you're taking up arms.
Yeah.
Criticism is not militancy.
Yeah, and actually we touched on this. Part of the reason why I don't think you and I went into it in great detail is because we ended up touching the subject last week on the television show, Tracy focused on intolerance and these accusations from Christians that atheists
that
are intolerant.
Right.
And we went on to explain that, no, intolerance means that you are working in some way to halt or stop or prevent something. The fact that I disagree with you about your beliefs and I think they're particularly unwise does not mean that I'm intolerant of them. I am actually tolerant because I'm perfectly fine with allowing you to have those beliefs and to exercise them and to even proselytize. I don't mind. I think Christians and everybody else has a right to their beliefs, and
sure.
They have a right to try to convince others to agree with to their beliefs. I have to believe that because that's what allows me that freedom to talk about this, to try to convince people of why you know I think their ideas are bad.
Yeah.
There's a guy on the Iron Chariots blog that you know I've been having a heck of a time with trying to get through and have some discussion because he just twists and turns like a twisty-turny thing, to quote Blackadder.
Yeah.
he had asked a question the other day. He had asked a question the other day about, because I had said, belief is the position of actually accepting that a proposition is true. And you have to be, it's not something you can choose. You can't just choose to believe something. You have to be convinced. Now, your particular criteria for becoming convinced of something may be flawed and may be extremely weak, such that it almost gets to the point where you can just choose to believe something. Because you do get to choose your criteria, so there's kind of a second-level choice going on there. And he said, I'd made the comment about beliefs need to be justified. And you have to have a certain quality and or quantity of evidence that justifies belief. And he said, who gets to do the determination of whether or not a belief is justified? And I said, you do. And I do. Everybody does. We each do. But that doesn't mean that anything goes. Just because we each create our own criteria for determining whether or not a belief is justified, we also live in a reality that we apparently share. And we can come up with consensus definitions. We can come up with objective criteria with which to evaluate evidence. We can come up with evidentiary standards that provide a common perception of reality.
Give the pedigree of the evidence.
And it's this that allows us to say, that guy over there who thinks he's Teddy Roosevelt, he's crazy, and we need to lock him up. He sincerely believes it.
Right.
But there's something wrong there. It's a particular type of delusion, and Dawkins was right to talk about the God delusion, because to any objective criteria, this is a delusion. You are free to believe it and proselytize on behalf of it, etc. We have different reactions to different types of
delusions. We're free to laugh at you.
Yeah. But the thing is let's say you have this belief that you can shoot yourself in the head with a gun and live. Or let's say jump out of an airplane without a parachute and live. Well, we can look at both of those. And there's two particular claims, and you honestly believe that it's true for you. You think you're justified. And everybody else is going to look at you and say, that's just crazy. Now, you believe it, and you may think that you have good evidence for it, but there's no reason anybody else should.
Right.
Despite the fact that we can cite actual cases where that has happened, where somebody has been shot in the head and they've lived, where somebody has fallen out of an airplane without a parachute or with a parachute that didn't work, and they lived. But what we're really talking about, we know for a fact that those things have happened and can happen, but what we really need to ask is how likely is it that that's going to happen?
And there's another issue with that. I mean, that's talking about a belief that shooting yourself in the head. What happens if the belief is, I have this belief that if I shoot people in the head, they won't die. They won't be hurt.
Or now they may appear to die. Yeah, they may appear to die, but I'm actually sending them to a better place.
What do you do?
Yeah.
Now you have to lock them up. You have to. And you have to be intolerant.
And intolerance
is not a bad thing in that case.
Right. There are cases when intolerance is perfectly justified. And the same thing is true for all these other words that they like to toss around, like censorship. There are times when censorship is justified. There are times when discrimination is justified.
Yeah.
Well, the objection to discrimination isn't that people discriminate against things or people or whatever else.
Yeah, we have to discriminate. Otherwise, everything's the same.
Yes. It happens all the time. The objection isn't against discrimination. It's against unjust discrimination.
Right.
Unsupported, irrational, bigoted discrimination. That's where the objection is.
Right.
It's not that you're discriminating. It's that you're doing so based on beliefs that don't warrant, that don't justify the type of discrimination you're exercising.
Right.
And that's the objection.
I can't drink this rock because it's not a fluid. Gosh, I'm so discriminatory.
Yeah. This whole thing about, what are you intolerant towards? And I've mentioned a number of times, if somebody's beating somebody over the head with a stick and you stop them, you're demonstrating intolerance towards them beating somebody over the head with a stick.
Right.
But you're not violating their rights to free expression because they don't have the right to beat somebody over the head.
Over the head, right.
So this example of jumping out of a plane or shooting oneself in the head, the big question is just because something is possible, and we know to the highest possible degree of certainty that you can be shot in the head and live, and that you can fall out of a plane without a chute and live. But that doesn't mean that you're justified in thinking that you will actually live if you shoot yourself in the head. Possibility
the odds are strongly
does not,
against you.
Yeah. Just because something's possible, even if it's actually happened, doesn't mean that it's probable, and it certainly doesn't mean that someone is justified. Yeah. However, despite this, if you honestly believe that if you shoot yourself in the head, you'll live, I support your right to believe that.
Sure.
I support your right to try it out.
In a safe manner, yes.
Well,
safe for other people. You don't
want to kill somebody else. I would prefer that you didn't. I'll do whatever I can to talk you out of it. And if I hear you trying to convince other people that they can do this as well, I'm going to jump in and say, that's a bunch of bullshit.
Right.
Because
you're going to be criticized.
you are potentially doing great harm to other people by convincing them to believe delusions and act upon them. And that's the key.
Acting.
I got in a discussion the other day. It was, whether or not God exists is just a matter of opinion. You have yours and I have mine. And rather than get into an argument with this person because we were in a public place and they're a friend and I know that they don't want to have this type of discussion, I just stopped talking. But whether or not a God exists is not a matter of opinion. It's a matter of fact.
Right.
You can have an opinion about what the actual status of that is. But whether or not your opinion is actually justified by any objective definition of evidential standards,
you better present it.
That's another story.
Yeah.
But the thing that everybody seems to get is this, or forget, is that even if it was a matter of opinion, even if it was just simply a belief, that's still significant because beliefs inform our actions.
Yeah.
We take action based on what we believe to be true. And the more probable something is, the more likely we are to take action on something. If you convince people, if you distort their perception of reality, if you encourage them to do it, if you've done it yourself, and then you take action on there, you are a danger to yourself and others.
Right.
And that's what we see in religion all the time. It doesn't matter that you're no longer launching crusades. This video that I posted up at the Atheist Experience site the other day, they went to a bunch of anti-choice protesters standing out there with their pictures of aborted fetuses and said, do you think abortion should be illegal? And every one of them, without missing a beat, was like, oh, yeah, it should be illegal. It's murder. And the second question was, well, if you make it illegal and a woman goes and has an illegal abortion, what punishment do you think she should get? Not one of them could quickly come to death or life imprisonment. Most of them were, well, I don't know that there should be a punishment, or maybe she suffered. She may have suffered enough, or, her punishment is something that society will eventually have to determine. They haven't given any thought to what the consequence should be. And he was like, well, why make something illegal if you're not going to have a punishment for it? And none of them had any good answer for it. They in the years that they'd been doing this protesting, in some cases, they'd never considered what the fate of the woman should be if she has an illegal abortion. And the point that I made on the blog was that that's not even the biggest question. The biggest question is, why was it so easy for you to quickly and easily say abortion should be illegal because it's murder, but yet none of you could quickly and easily say it's murder and therefore it should carry the same penalties as murder? Without fail, they all came up with this, well, maybe it should be this punishment, or I'm not sure there should be a punishment. So somewhere in the back of your minds, and I'm talking to those people in the video, in the back of your minds, you know this isn't murder. Somewhere in the back of your minds, you know there's a very, very big difference here.
Right.
And despite that, you're still walking lockstep with dogma. Oh, abortion is this big threat, and I need to save the babies, and I must do whatever I can to make it illegal. Mm-hmm. You're not thinking for yourself. Now, for those people who are, opposed to abortion for rational reasons and come up with, their punishments, whatever, I'm obviously not talking to you. I'm talking to the sheep.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, none of them are going to hear me.
Most likely. Whoa. Should we do some news?
Well, one of our regular listeners sent us a couple of good polls, and it's not going to really make news for the show or be used in the show.
But
I wanted to acknowledge him because I hadn't had a chance to send him emails. We've exchanged emails a few times in the past. Okay. He sent me, and I'm going to end up using some of these for research for the book.
Okay.
One of them is a study from Baylor that talks about, and it was funded by the Templeton Foundation, but it basically goes around asking people what they actually believe, and it gets into and what they do with regard to religion. When's the last time you've been to church? How often do you go to church? How often do you pray? What do you pray about? Rate the following description of God as, you know, strongly agrees with your view or strongly doesn't, and everything else, so that it kind of you can drill down.
Oh, interesting.
To find out what people believe. And the thing that I found most interesting about the poll is the various contradictions that are in there.
Uh-huh.
Some of this is based on my own perception from my time as a Christian. But there, you've got, you know, if X percent of the population believes that Jesus was divine, then that carries with it some theological baggage.
Yeah.
And yet when you ask specific questions that address those different types of baggage, you get different percentages of the people. I mean, you have, if you, let's say, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but let's say 40% actually believed in a real literal physical hell. And then you might have 20% who say that they believe, I'm not going to get the explanation right, but there's some overlap in there of contradictory beliefs where people don't believe that are some people who believe everybody will be saved also believe in a literal hell where people will be punished.
Right.
And also there's some portion of those who must also believe that nobody will be saved or, you know, because of the way it works out. It's a good poll, and I haven't had a good study, I guess, not just a poll. And I haven't had time to look it over completely. But there's interesting stuff in there, and it's going to come in handy because one of the things I want to address is what do people really believe? What do they claim to believe? How do they act based on those beliefs?
When you start trying to nail them down, what do they actually believe?
The objections to Dawkins' book and Harris's book and everything else, you get these egghead theologians who say, well, they're not talking about any real concept of God. We've talked about this before on the show. They're not talking about the egghead's idea of God. They're talking about the person in the pew's idea of God.
Right.
There are a bunch of people out there who...
There's a lot more people in the pews than...
They believe what they believe because they were raised to believe it. They don't even know why.
And it's simplistic because their parents were simplistic.
Yeah, it's kind of like these people who are going out, you know, protesting abortions without thinking about, you know, the ramifications of what do we do if women have illegal abortions.
Right.
The second poll that he sent us was a little different. Parade magazine had a poll, and I'll spin around and pick that
Parade, up. Oh boy.
The question that they asked was, do you believe dinosaurs could have lived alongside humans?
Oh, boy.
Care to hazard a guess as to, out of almost 8,000 people, how many said yes? What percentage said yes, okay. Dinosaurs and humans lived alongside?
I'm going to take a guess. 40%?
You're really close. 36% of the people who responded believe that dinosaurs and humans could have coexisted.
Flintstones.
Yeah.
Flintstones.
36% of the people who responded think Flintstones is a documentary.
Wow.
The good thing is that I think that number's probably gone down.
Yeah, it probably means they have a really incorrect idea of what brake shoes are.
But, and another one of the people, the Iron Chariots Wiki. Wiki.ironchariots.org, where we've got the counter-apologetic stuff. There's a page up for the nonprofits, and one of the regular contributors, and by the way, for those of you who are regular contributors, I no longer count myself as a regular contributor, despite the fact that I'm still an admin, just because I don't think I've posted anything up there in ages. But one of our regular contributors went in and has transcribed all of the introductions you've been doing.
Oh, my God.
Based on the logical fallacies. So for anybody who missed any of the shows or for anybody who wanted to see the transcription and not just have to pull up the podcast to listen to it, they're up there at the wiki. And you can see just how brilliant the man sitting at the other side of the table from me is because everybody has – nobody's had anything but good things to say about them, and it's – just email after email about, oh, best intro ever, and I laughed, and oh, that was awesome. And,
you know, I could actually send him the digital copy I got.
Well, see, that's the thing. I'm sure he went through and transcribed it, and you've actually got it digitally.
Painful.
So, yeah, you might want to.
I might do that, definitely. Give him my email address or something.
Or you could just create an account at the wiki.
That's true.
And add it yourself every 2 weeks.
That's true. Yes, this last one was it post hoc ergo propter hoc?
Yeah.
Yeah. Causation does not equal. I mean, correlation does not equal causation. Yeah. Which led to some very strange sentence structures. And, you know, it's painful writing an entire intro based on a logical fallacy, because in my usual discourse, I try as hard as I can to eliminate those things from my discussions. Of course, I can't be 100% perfect in that. I probably execute a lot of really bad arguments. But I'm sure that a trained apologist could do a much better job at writing these things, because they could just – they don't even have to know that they're writing something about logical fallacies. They'll just issue them right and left.
Yeah. They're going to be able to include a bunch of logical fallacies, but to do an introduction based on a logical fallacy –
deliberately, maybe
not. You have to actually understand it, in which case I don't think you'd be committing it quite as often. Somebody in the chat room just asked why – the pictures for the nonprofits are so old and there aren't any new pictures. And the answer is really simple, because we haven't bothered to take any new pictures.
Yes, and besides the fact that if we take new pictures, we'll just look older.
Yeah.
Because we are.
So the picture that's posted there, both at the nonprofit site and at the wiki, is the picture that was taken at Russell's with you and Russell and Jeff. Long before, I think the picture's older. I think the picture's from before I ever joined the ACA.
I don't think it's at Russell's. I think that was taken at there was a free thought convention or something.
No, it's Russell's upstairs at the balcony. You can see the railing behind you guys.
All right. Okay. Well.
I'm pretty positive. But anyway, we did talk about taking some new pictures, and we may.
Yeah.
We may do, you know, Dennis and I may just go out and, like, I'll put him in a dress. We can get, like, wedding pictures.
Please, no.
No, we may take some new pictures and put them up. Even if we do, I want to keep that old picture up, because since Jeff called in today, it's kind of like that where you take some action to your – it was a keep-alive signal that Jeff – sent to us today by calling in.
Yeah.
So I want to keep that picture up there because, you know, Russell's currently busy with stuff and Jeff's busy. But
if we redo the picture, obviously I need to Photoshop Jeff as this misty form in the background.
Ooh, that would be cool. Puppet master with strings.
Yeah. Sort of a Darth Vader figure.
Maybe we'll have to come up with a better picture. Let's stop talking about us and hit some more news items.
Right.
Because we've got like 20 minutes. By the way, for the listeners, I am going to start holding us to 90 minutes as close as possible. Okay. I realize, you know, we can still go over a little bit. But the thing is that the file size, even though I've gotten that fixed,
starts ballooning.
It does get bigger. And also, if I can get us down to 90 minutes, hopefully we'll ramble less and I'll have more time to get some other stuff done too.
Right. Okay. Well,
he said rambling.
Top of the thing here is Little Rock, Arkansas. It's a girl. Again, for Jim Bob and Michelle Duggar, the proud parents of 17 children. And after Jennifer Danielle was born Thursday morning, her parents already were talking about having more children. We love to have them. We'd love to have more, Michelle Duggar said, adding that the girls are outnumbered 7 to 10 in the family. We love the ruffles and the lace. And I'm thinking, you know, that much ruffles and lace, that sort of qualifies for a fetish rather than a family.
Yeah.
You know, it's, oh my God.
You know, I'd love to say this had absolutely nothing to do with atheism and there's no reason for us to talk about it, but I don't think that's completely true. However, I don't think the religion is necessarily a huge deal. I mean, it's true they're Christians and God told them to be fruitful and multiply. They are homeschooling and home running a home business or whatever, and all this other stuff. I don't know their family. Maybe all those kids are loved and cared for properly, but I have to think that they're not. And here's why. There's only 24 fucking hours in the day. They've got kids that range from 17 or 18, I think their oldest one is, down to this newborn. And let me tell you, I'd be more than happy to see how their family works, but I think I already know. That is the oldest. The older the kids get, the more responsibility they have, and the more responsibility includes taking care of the younger ones.
Right.
While mom and dad are breeding and turning her womb into a clown car, the other kids are doing more and more of the work around the house, more and more of the work for the business. And yes, they're talking about how this promotes such a close family. Yes, it actually does, because they have nothing but their family. They don't get introduced to, a diverse society. I believe that they're homeschooling. If this is the same family that I hope there's not two families that have spewed out 17 kids. There's no consideration for, one of the things is that when you're considering whether or not you should take an action, one of the questions you can ask yourself, and you don't have to base your decision strictly on this, but one question you can ask is, what would happen if everybody did this?
Yeah.
And the answer to that question with regard to what if everybody got together and had 17 kids looking at 18, we would outlive our resources in by Thursday, I think.
Yeah.
Something like
yeah.
that. It's silly. We have Selfish. A population problem. I don't typically get on and do too much preaching with regard to the environment. I probably should do more. I'm sure there are people who wish we really would, considering that we do have some limited voice from the podcast. And maybe we will. Part of it's about me getting more educated about the subject.
We have an environmental article here as well. Yeah. Sad one.
But, you're free to have as many kids as you can support and care for. I wish you wouldn't, but you're free to do that, and I'll support your right.
Yeah.
But we're rapidly approaching a time when the actions taken by China with regard to limiting people to two kids, it's going to make sense globally. And there are tough questions there about, and we've had tough questions with regard to homeschooling and kids. How much control should the state have over how you raise your kid? That's a tough issue. As we get closer to facing the tough issues like that about population control and states' interests in within your family, et cetera, the types of things that are going to determine what decisions we make are what we believe.
Right.
And if you have a society that is populated with people who believe that they should just spew kids out in order to make God happy – then you're likely to make really bad decisions on that.
Right.
Decisions
that are not in keeping with reality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The people who say we don't have a population problem they'll say, well, we could fit the entire population of the planet into Fort Lauderdale's, something like that. Yeah. If we all had about, 2 square foot of standing space.
Living space,
The thing that you don't
want to live in that condition.
The thing you don't realize is that 70% of the Earth is water. We can't live there.
Right.
We need a good – some of it's ice and frozen and the climate's not habitable like deserts.
Can't live it there.
Can't really live there. Yeah. We need X amount of food to sustain. We need plants to continue providing us with oxygen, et cetera. Resources – the equation doesn't just consider how much square footage an individual person can take up.
Yeah. One of the big reasons we can't feed everybody is we can't get the food to them.
Yeah. The other big reason is that you've got these crazy religions hoarding all the money.
Right.
And they're using it to buy insurance to help pay for them to molest kids.
Yep.
If you're a Catholic and you're not outraged and screaming at the Vatican – you're part of the problem, period.
Yep. Now, with this 17 children thing, it reminds me of the Onion article talking about you know, miracle of birth occurs for 64 billionth time. It's like, yeah.
God has blessed us with 17 miracles.
Right. And now quickly move on to another one.
Yeah.
Director of a Christian boot camp and an employee were arrested Friday for allegedly dragging a 15-year-old girl behind a van.
I'm so mad I'm going to let you rant about this one.
After she fell behind the group during a morning run, authorities said. Charles Eugene Flowers and Stephanie Bassett of San Antonio-based Love Demonstrated Ministries, oh, the irony inherent in that title, a 32-day boot camp, were arrested on aggravated assault charges for the alleged June 12th incident. The two are accused of tying the girl to the van with a rope, then dragging her, according to arrest affidavit filed Wednesday by the Nueces County Sheriff's Department. Both remained in Nueces County Jail late Friday on $100,000 bond each. A call to Love Demonstrated Ministries was not immediately returned Friday. No listing was found for Bassett. An answering machine at a listing for Flowers cut off during the attempt to leave a message Friday. Wow, this guy's just going on all about his details, how he tried to track this thing down. The Flowers, the camp's director, allegedly ordered Bassett to run alongside the girl after she fell behind, the affidavit said. When the girl stopped running, Bassett allegedly yelled at her and pinned her to the ground while Flowers tied the rope to her, according to an affidavit. The girl's mother gave investigators photos of her daughter's injuries that were taken at a hospital where the girl was treated and a sworn statement from a witness who claimed to see the girl being dragged on her stomach at least three times.
I don't even want to believe this story is true.
I know. There's got to be another side to the story. That's what my brain tells me, but...
Because everything about it is wrong.
No.
Starting with boot camp.
Right.
What? A 32-day boot camp? You know how long a military boot camp's like 8 weeks, so it's...
Right.
This is like half of military boot camp.
Sure.
What exactly is it that they're training them for?
Oh, they're spiritual warriors, no doubt.
Spiritual warriors don't have to worry if they fall behind in a run.
Yeah, well...
If you fall behind in a run, I mean, this is some kind of
thing
militant... the final wars coming, dominionist.
This is a madrasa, man. I mean,
you got Pastor Becky type. Well, if the Muslims, if they're teaching their little kids how with grenades and guns, and we want to do the same thing. Well,
right.
This is where you get.
Yeah. And I mean, I can see how these guys running that little run could have got themselves so caught up in it that, yeah, they did exactly what's described here. I can visualize it.
See, that's the difference,
and
though.
And that's sad.
If you're in a military boot camp and you can't keep up on a run, this is how it works, because running was my weak spot in the military. As a matter of fact, it's part of the reason that I was ended up being my discharge was medical under honorable circumstances because of failing to run, because I'm not a runner. If you fall behind on a run in boot camp, the guys around you are supposed to help you.
Right.
They will actually drag your ass along and somebody else will help, I've seen guys who couldn't run a lick, who shouldn't have passed and shouldn't get into boot camp, who were helped through the run because the idea is you all need to make it as a team.
Team, right. Yeah.
Any of you fall behind, you've failed to some degree. So they do it... with a good purpose in mind to promote camaraderie and stuff.
So you're saying they don't tie them to the back of a Jeep?
No. And anybody who's seen, even the harshest trainings, like the stuff that the SEALs go through and Rangers and whatever else, if you're in some other weak-ass branch of the military. I'm going to get letters for that. Don't write me. It was a joke. It was a joke. I was in the Navy. I make fun of others. You get it.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. But they don't tie you and drag you. If you can't cut it, you're cut.
Yeah.
You are out of the program. You are out of the military. You are out-processed ASAP. You get X number of chances. They'll try to help you. But nobody ties you up and drags you behind a truck.
God, it's just...
What are the...
This is the same kind of hysterical reactions that result in deaths at exorcisms.
Yes, which there was just one the other day.
They just get caught up in it. And they think they're so right, they're so 100% certain that what they're doing is right, that's it.
There was a story about a grandpa doing an exorcism the other day.
Kill another person rather than admit they might be wrong.
You people are sick.
Yep.
That exorcism's that way. This is just, you know, and the sad thing is that this boot camp, I don't know this for certain. I may be wrong. It may have even gotten government funds under the various faith-based initiatives and promoting the morality. But the one thing is that it's probably run by a nonprofit organization that doesn't have to pay taxes because it's probably run by a church.
Yep.
So when you talk about all the good things that churches and donate to churches and the churches do with the money, this might be an example of that.
Yeah.
You know, the world is shocked when some homophobes, you know, drag a homosexual behind a truck, or when some KKK guys drag a black person behind a truck. I realize that the world is also going to be outraged at what happened here at this boot camp. And that's the only shining light that I can see in this, is that somebody may go, whoa, wait, there are Christian groups with love in the title of the group, and they're doing stuff like this?
Yeah. And here they're dragging their own?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Boy, I feel
it's
the love.
Crazy. Yeah. Yeah. Now, here's the one I really should have followed that first story up with when we were talking about environmental stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. While they're having 17 kids, humans drive rare dolphin to extinction. You can say goodbye to the Yangtze River dolphin. Until recently, one of the most endangered species on the planet has been declared officially extinct after an intensive survey of its natural habitat. The freshwater marine mammal, which could weigh up to a quarter of a ton, is the first large vertebrate forced to extinction by human activity in 50 years. They make the point of saying by human activity.
Yeah.
And only the fourth time an entire evolutionary line of mammals has vanished from the face of the earth since 1500. Conservationists describe the extinction as a shocking tragedy caused not by active persecution, but accidentally and carelessly through a combination of factors including unsustainable fishing and mass shipping. In the 1950s, the Yangtze had a population of thousands of freshwater dolphins, but their numbers declined dramatically when China industrialized and transformed the Yangtze into a crowded artery of mass shipping, fishing, and power generation. A survey in 1999 estimated the population was just 13. Historically, the species achieved nearly demigod status among fishermen, who recounted tales of dolphins being reincarnations of drowned princesses. Well, they're all dead now.
Yeah.
Sam Turvey, a biologist at London Zoo, worked with Chinese government scientists to survey the Yangtze downstream of the giant Three Gorges Dam. The researchers hoped that if any dolphins were spotted, they could be taken to a reserve. But at the end of the survey, they had neither seen nor heard any sign of the dolphins, according to their report in the journal Biology Letters. The hopes of each person on the survey died at different points. Everyone had a moment of realization that we weren't going to find anything, Dr. Turvey said. Ooh, that's a chilling count right there.
Wow. Yeah, we actually talked about this a little bit before the show started, and if they're going to attribute it to humans, obviously
they have their 90-some-odd justifications for that.
90-some-odd percent of the 99.9% of all the species that have ever lived on Earth are extinct.
Right.
Extinction is something that happens, probably happens more frequently than we know.
Right. And it shows us that evolution is not our friend.
Yeah.
Never was, never will be.
The universe is that impartial. But it does also teach us that there are consequences to our actions, that we can affect the environment in which we live, which, this should be news to anybody. And while, you know, I realize that species aren't going to live forever, it is a bit sad that we have
lost one
that is, you know, there's a thing about hunting to extinction and destroying a habitat to cause an extinction where, we're having an effect and it's causing harm to others.
And everyone likes dolphins, and hopefully this will gain some
airtime. nobody
raise some consciousness here.
Nobody bats an eye about, you know, trying to exterminate, you know,
yeah, who cares
ants
if a beetle goes away?
Yeah, you know, whatever.
I mean, yeah.
There was another story, not about extinction, but tied to evolution this week, which I'm going to spend probably 35 seconds on.
Okay.
Because it's just not worth it. The creationists and anti-evolutionists
are already on the bandwagon.
Are running around saying, ha ha, ha ha, we found something and evolution's probably wrong. Ha ha, ha ha, ha.
God,
and it's this whole thing.
Such morons.
It's this whole thing about some skulls from Homo habilis and Homo erectus that show a dating scheme that goes against a linear view of evolution, of the evolution of humans from apes to humans. And boy, the creationists are, I mean, they're like, I think they're just like whacking off to this.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just thrilled. And all I have to say is, you're an idiot.
Yeah, they're morons.
You don't understand evolution. It's not a ladder. It's a tree.
Right.
When you were born, your mom didn't die, usually. I mean,
sometimes, but
you know. You branch off from it. So it's not surprising that the species that you branched off from continued to live. What this tells us...
You probably have some living cousins.
what this tells us is that one particular species lived a little longer than we thought.
Yeah.
And what that has done is promoted good scientists to do the right thing, which is to reevaluate their analysis of the evidence. This doesn't contradict evolutionary theory.
It
works within evolutionary theory. It reforms it and allows us to continue to broaden our understanding of reality.
Yeah,
and that's the way science works.
And there's another thing it tells us, is that the creationists are asshats.
Yeah.
They don't know what the hell they're talking about.
It's no big deal. And if it is a big deal in any sense, it demonstrates that the scientific method works.
Yeah.
That scientific ideas are constantly open to change when the evidence changes. Just because you've got an answer that you don't want to change.
The fundamental difference, and I do mean fundamental, is that when you make a theist, when a believer has to change their belief, you know, or even if you try to make them change their belief, you're trying to make them betray their belief. And so they have the thought that the strength of science, you know, it changes its theories to match the evidence, to account for all the observed evidence.
Right.
Right. They view that in a completely different framework.
Yeah.
Of, oh, they're just coming up with new.
They're just making this shit up as they go along.
Making this stuff up as they go along.
They'll say anything.
No.
These crazy scientists, they find new evidence, and what do? They change their minds.
They change their theory. Oh. Well, yes! That's the whole point!
I mean, I tell you what,
not
only is it the point, but if you go to some of the especially the young Earth creationist sites and the apologetic sites, if you read like what their mission is, what their statement of faith is, I can't count the number of times I've seen a little paragraph that goes something like this. We believe in the reliability of science to prove the wonders that God has created for us. And where science and the Bible contradict, science is wrong. And they'll eventually, because science constantly changes, they'll eventually come around to figuring that out. But anywhere where it contradicts the Bible, science is wrong. Wow.
Yeah.
See, there's a difference. One thing uses the evidence to form conclusions, and the other picks and chooses from evidence that already matches their conclusions.
Right.
It's dishonest.
Just crazy. Let's see. What else have I got?
You've got 5 minutes.
Okay.
Ish.
Well, let's talk about Washington, D.C. Idaho U.S. Representative Bill Solly has questioned a Hindu prayer that was offered to open the U.S. Senate last month.
See, you know,
and it was kind of a lame prayer, but still, I mean,
one of the news stories was that none of the senators objected. I mean, you had the people the people who came in to disrupt the prayer.
Right.
They were saying, none of you senators had the balls to come in and object to this prayer, so we did it for you. Mm-hmm. And then you had another group of people who were irate that none of the senators objected to these asshats who were interrupting the prayer.
Right.
My objection is that none of these senators are standing up saying, we shouldn't have a prayer in the first place. And now you've got these new people. Go ahead with what he said.
Yes, this is what prayer does. It just creates division. Yeah. But let's see. Sali is quoted on onenewsnow.com that when a Hindu prayer is offered, that's a different God, and that it creates problems for the longevity of this country. Sali was not commenting on what the Senate should be able to do, Sali's spokesman Wayne Hoffman said, but Hoffman said the congressman did oppose a Hindu prayer to open the Senate. Hoffman said the Sali interview, when he made the remarks, took place on the American Family Network. So they're saying he's taking his everything out of context. Basically, what I read it as is he's
pandering to pundits.
He's pandering to whoever he happens to be talking to at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah, you're disingenuous, dishonest.
I'm sorry. If you say it, you say it.
Yeah.
And it's these weaselly people. Let's see. What else did he say? What he's saying, this article, I should have underlined all this crap. Bill Sali remarked in a radio interview last week that a Muslim congressman was not what was envisioned by the founding fathers.
Yes.
Yeah.
How dare you allow a Muslim in Congress?
Man. Yeah. It's this incredible whining. It's, we want freedom of religion as long as it's our religion, basically. It's all just that.
You're not fooling anybody. And and when you get people out here like this guy, Sully, who's not even trying to fool people, what bothers me most isn't the fact that he's honest here. It's that when he's called on his honesty, he will be dishonest.
Right.
He will, no, I support religious freedom and everything else. I was just saying that the founding fathers didn't intend for us to have Muslim senators. Now, that doesn't mean that we can't have a Muslim senator. I personally have an objection to it. But we should consider all this as part of religious freedom. But from the point of view of the founders, we shouldn't have a Muslim senator. All right, you hemming and hawing little piece of crap.
Yeah. They go into all sorts of bizarre contortions. This country continues to prosper because of that devotion to those principles. Stating the country is based on Christian principles.
Yeah.
Hoffman,
dragging kids behind trucks.
Hoffman, his spokesman, says, Sal believes the prayer offered at the beginning of each session of the Senate is a meaningful thing. It's not something you do to take up time. It's something you do because you truly want to reach out to God for guidance. It's like, good grief. They're just...
I'm going to touch on one other news story.
Go for it.
I'm not going to bother reading it. I'm just going to comment on it real quick. Came in, somebody posted it to the list the other day. There was a church in Arlington that was going to do a cemetery, going to do a funeral for a young man until they found out that he was gay and that the family planned to display like pictures of him and his boyfriend in romantic embrace or whatever at the funeral. And the church said, oh, no, we don't want to have any of that. You'll have to find some other place to do it. And I think they even offered to help pay.
Oh, yeah. I heard something about that.
I think they offered to help pay. And somebody on the list, had mentioned that this was a rights issue.
Right.
And I immediately jumped on him and said, no, this is not a rights issue at all. The church is a private organization. They're free to do whatever they want. But I wanted to bring it up on the show because despite the fact that this isn't a rights issue, this church is not just being discriminative, it's being bigoted.
Oh, yeah.
And it's trying to hide that by doing this payoff scheme of, hey, we'll help you pay for another one. We just don't really feel that that would be appropriate in our church. You have every right to approve or disapprove of whatever activities you want at your church. It's a private thing. It's not a big deal at all. But it does show us that you are hateful people.
Yeah, you're hypocrites.
You are hateful, and you want to hide it. You want to pay it away, buy it off, just the same as what the Catholic Church has done with pedophile priests. You want to spend some money to help your public image.
Right.
You know, on the Paul Azan thing that we've ripped to shreds, you had Karen Hunter saying that atheists just need better PR people, that we need, you know, like atheist Hallmark cards or something to help improve our public image. No, we don't. It's the Christians that need better public relations people, because you've got Ted Haggard, who's completely heterosexual, and as soon as I can get that song into a format, we'll be using it as an intro, who's an embarrassment to, you know, the Christians, and especially those in the megachurch variety. You've got Kent Hovind, who's now in prison for tax evasion, who's an evolution denier, a liar and a fraud with regard to, you know, his over-exaggeration of his credentials. I refuse to call the man doctor. If you got
God.
Your... I could get a doctorate out of a Cracker Jack box that would carry more weight than what his does. You have... Jim Baker, Jim Swaggart, Jerry Falwell, all of these people who are an embarrassment to you. You have priests, and not just Catholics, priests and ministers, people who abuse their positions as God's personal messenger on the planet in order to abuse children, to take your money, to fund all sorts of atrocities, to deny people the rights to health care, to the they institute this global gag rule. They stick their foot into the government. They try to control everything. They're the ones that need a better PR firm.
Yeah, you know.
And what they're doing is they're buying it with money.
Right.
And I'm not buying.
It's when I first started this show, I think I did a little segment on I get on alt atheism, and there's a poster there, an atheist who posts all the naughtiness that he can find from Christians.
Yeah.
You know, pastor is arrested for raping own daughter, blah blah blah, all this stuff, and the sheer volume of stuff he can find is astonishing.
Although, to be fair, they are 70-some-odd percent of the population, so
yeah.
You're going to get more.
Yeah, yeah.
But
it's like, hey, yeah,
I don't,
he can keep it up, and he's been keeping it up till now. I mean, for years.
Inevitably, when you see a similar story about an atheist,
yeah,
what you'll find...
When was the last one?
Is that their atheism actually is completely irrelevant to the issue of what they did.
Uh-huh.
And the reason for that is the same reason, you know, they try to use the Stalin argument or whatever else. And
right.
It's because atheism doesn't serve any dogma or tenets or say anything about what one actually should do. It's mm-hmm. not the reason for this. However, among a lot of the bad behavior that we see from believers, and I don't want to just say Christians, but quite frankly, in the United States, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Their bad behavior is based on their religion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this. Granted, I know there's nowhere in the Bible that it says, thou shalt tie up the slow runner and draggeth them behind the moving vehicle. But what they're doing is out of a motivation for a particular religious dogma. I know it doesn't fit what all of you believe. I know you're not all sheep. Most of you are. To some degree, most of the believers are going to follow whatever somebody tells them because humans, and it's not your fault, are inherently lazy
right.
when it comes to thinking and evaluating.
Yeah. Making decisions? That's hard.
Hey, why should I read a book when I can hear a soundbite?
Yeah.
Why should I think about what the implications of my actions are when somebody's already assured me that I'm doing the right thing, that I'm doing God's work, that this is what God wants done?
Yep.
Clearly, he knows more about what God wants than I do because he's more holy than me.
Yeah, just go for it. Yeah.
I do things that God doesn't want me to do. I sin, and I'm a sinner, so it makes sense that I should listen to the holy man who's mm-hmm. telling me what I need to do and what I need to support. And then that's how you get the Catholic Church is saying, don't support Amnesty International.
Yep.
Let's have a global gag rule. Let's not give people, you know, food and medical care if they have abortion or condoms as part of their sexual education.
Mm-hmm.
It's absurd.
Yeah.
It's obscene.
I had to make everything up as I went along. I didn't have the easy answers supplied to me by a book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you don't have to do everything the hard way, but, you know, just take a few minutes to think about why do you really believe what you believe?
Yeah.
And part two, What does that mean?
Believe. Yeah.
No, what is it your beliefs inform? I believe something. Okay. Do I have a good reason for believing it? And what actions am I going to take on behalf of those beliefs?
Right. Yep.
What consequences are there for those actions? If I believe this, what other things should I actually believe?
Yeah.
You talk about these people with Pascal's wager, and well, if Pascal's wager weren't horribly flawed at every level, which it is,
yeah,
then what it would tell you is that your best bet is to find the religion with the best heaven and or the worst hell, and that's the religion you should be an adherent of.
Right.
But that's not the way things work, and I don't have time to go into all Pascal's wager's flaws.
Yeah, no.
So we're over time.
All right. Well, should I close it off then?
Close it off.
All right. Since I'm thanking you, you listened to the show. And because there's a point in time, 2 weeks from now, we'll see you then. I'm Dennis Lubay, because he's Matt Dillahunty. Bye-bye.